Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn, and we have very special guests on the podcast today. He is award-winning actor and head of the Gary Sinise Foundation, Mr. Gary Sinise, here to talk to us about his book, Grateful American, as well as a new film coming out this week, I Still Believe. So, Gary, welcome to the Council of Trent podcast.
Hey, great to be here, Trent. Thank you.
So glad you're able to come, and I really enjoyed reading through your book, Grateful American, so highly recommend it to everyone. I'm going to share a little bit of the book's description, and then we can talk about some of it related to your story that some people may have heard about and others haven't. So according to the book's description, as a kid in suburban Chicago, Gary Sinise was more interested in sports and rock and roll than reading or schoolwork, but when he impulsively auditioned for a school production of West Side Story, he found his purpose. Or so it seemed. Within a few years, Gary and a handful of friends created what became one of the most exciting new theater companies in America. And so the book details your career in acting before taking off with your role as Lieutenant Dan in the Academy Award-winning film Forrest Gump. But then after that, it was really after that role that changed your life and your relationship with the military community and our armed forces. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, where to start? I grew up in Chicago, born on the south side of Chicago, moved to the northern suburbs. I think moving around a little bit at that time when I was younger was a little disruptive, and I had a little bit of trouble. I write about that in the book, that I was a kind of a struggling student, always getting into trouble and never very successful academically in school. So I had a hard time. And this is back in the late 60s and early 70s when I was in high school, and I just accidentally stumbled into a woman who was walking down the hallway, and I was hanging out in the hallway, and she was the drama teacher, and she told me to come and audition for West Side Story because she thought I looked like a gang member, so she told me to come.
Followed your career a bit, because when I see a lot of your films, you're such a nice guy, but you end up in these antagonist roles, and because one of my favorite roles is your detective Jimmy Shaker in Ransom,
Evil Jimmy,
so she just saw you and said you'd be a good bad guy in this.
Well,
or a gangster, or
I was one of the gang members I was in the Sharks, and I got a two line part, and I'm maybe it wasn't even two lines, it was a couple of words, I think, and I said I just fell in love with it, and ended up starting a theater company after that, where we called Steppenwolf Theater, and we got to play a lot of different types of parts, a lot of different roles.
Yeah.
So I was used to playing a lot of different things and playing good guys and bad guys. That's just part of the business.
There's a lot of people who came through Steppenwolf, like John Malkovich and Joan Allen. So it's big for a lot of people.
Yeah. Laurie Metcalf was one of our original members. Wonderful, wonderful actors. And the company now, started in 74. And so it's 46 years old. This year, it's been around a long time. Where we've got multi-million-dollar building and everything. It started with teenagers, right out of high school, and now it's this big facility. We're actually building a new theater on the property that we own right now. So it's an ongoing thing. I don't do much with it anymore because I'm so busy with everything else. But as far as acting, the variety of roles that I played in those days at Steppenwolf gave me the education that I needed to go forward. And so I've had some really good opportunities to play some good guys and some bad guys, for sure.
Well, probably one of your most famous roles is Lieutenant Dan, or as he says in the film, Lieutenant Diane in Forrest Gump. And I love reading in the book because you said that there were other films at the time you were really hoping to get in on, and you didn't, and you did not expect how you would be received after playing this character in Forrest Gump, that it really became life-changing for you.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I mean, I wanted the part very badly.
Yeah.
I remember when I read it, I had been working in support of Vietnam veterans starting in the 80s. And then 1993, I had the opportunity to audition to play a Vietnam veteran, Lieutenant Dan. So I very much wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And I went in, auditioned. You know, I was kind of sitting at a table like this, and you know, the director and the producer and the writer, and they're all over there. And I was pretending I was in the wheelchair, and I did a couple of those wheelchair scenes.
Yeah.
And then they said, thank you, that was great, get going. And, you know, they brought somebody else in to read the part. And I didn't hear anything for, gosh, it's 2 or 3 weeks. I kept asking my agent, did you hear anything? Did they call? What are they doing? You know, am I going to get the part? And they said, well, they're seeing a lot of other people and they're considering this and that. And so, you know, you can't, the one thing you learn, don't hang your hat on one part because, you know, there's many more actors than parts.
Right.
So I just went about my business auditioning for other things. And I got very close to a couple of, two movies, and I actually got a third. I screen tested for a movie called Little Buddha that was being made by Bernardo Bertolucci.
Ah.
And very well-known Italian director. And I screen tested for the part of the father in that. And the other guy that screen tested was Chris Isaak, you know, the musician.
Yeah.
Chris got the part. And I didn't get that one. And if I would have gotten that part, I may have done it. And it would have taken me out of the running for Forrest Gump because I wasn't hearing anything.
And that's, I think, an important lesson for a lot of people listening is that sometimes we'll have our hopes set on something. And we'll think like, oh no, why didn't God let this come into my life? Or why did this get taken away? And then it's done for a bigger opportunity, something more important to show up for you.
Yeah. And, you know, Forrest Gump, I ended up getting.
Yeah.
And the other movies that I was hoping to get while I waited to find out about Forrest Gump, all of those did not do well at the box office, and I got Forrest Gump, and it was the biggest hit of the year. So, I mean, something happened. I don't know.
But what's interesting is that after Forrest Gump, there were veterans who were just Vietnam veterans, people who were just excited to meet you, and a lot of them didn't even know that you're Gary Sinise. To them, you're Lieutenant Dan, and they were just so thrilled just to meet you, even though you're an actor portraying a role. It had a deep resonance with a lot of them, it seemed like.
In the military community, yeah, that part has resonated, and especially with our wounded. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, I have a very active service life in supporting the men and women who serve our country. And I remember the first time I walked into one of our military hospitals to visit our wounded. I was over in Germany, actually. There's a military hospital in Germany called Landstuhl. Mm-hmm. And if you're injured in Iraq or Afghanistan or anywhere there, the first place you go is Landstuhl, where they stabilize you and get you prepared to come home. And so these, the folks that I was seeing that, they were fresh off the battlefield, I mean, within a day.
Yeah.
And they were badly wounded. And I remember being quite apprehensive about it. And the first people that I saw, I was standing there in a room full of wounded guys, and somebody looked at me and recognized me and started calling me Lieutenant Dan. And then the whole mood changed in there and everybody started laughing. And these were all guys that were wounded. They were at the hospital. They were going to be patched up and sent back to the battlefield. And they all had that sort of quiet thousand-yard stare, you know, they'd been in combat. But as soon as one of them recognized Lieutenant Dan, the whole all of a sudden it was a happy in there, and everybody wanted a picture and wanted to talk about the character and wanted to, you know. And then when I started going into the hospital rooms and seeing the people that were in beds and they were missing limbs and very, very badly wounded, I found that they were interested in the story of that character because he's, you know, it's a positive story when you look at it.
Right.
In the end, he's back on new legs and he's moving on with his life and he's successful. And I always.
He found his peace with God.
He found his peace with God. Yeah, that's right. It's a beautiful story in that way, because that's, you know, I always talk about that because it's a resilient story, and it's the story that we want for everybody who goes to war. We want them to come home and be okay and move on with their lives.
Did you feel apprehensive about meeting with these soldiers, especially wounded veterans, like a feeling inside something like, how can I as an actor serve you when you've served me and my country so much more than I have? Like, you're on the front lines, people are shooting at you. I just get in front of a camera. Do you ever feel like that apprehension kind of?
I did in the early days.
Okay.
And I was telling somebody earlier today, you know, there was a time where I started going to visit, you know, the hospitals and visit the battlefields and the war zones and whatnot. And I'm, you know, I don't think I'm anything that special or anything like that. But I realize for a lot of folks who aren't in the movie business or the television business, they watch our product, they watch our shows, and they watch our movies and whatnot. You know, meeting somebody who they recognize from the movie screen or the television screen can be special.
Yeah.
It can be uplifting when somebody like that, who you're watched on television, all of a sudden shows up in the war zone to shake your hand and have lunch with you and take a picture. So, you know, after a while, I started to realize that the trips were indeed doing what I wanted, which were lifting spirits, and that while I don't think I'm that special of a deal, just the fact that I showed up in a far-off war zone or something like that on a military base where people are getting shot at daily, that is kind of special to somebody. So I wanted to do more of that because I wanted to lift people up.
And you were in the midst of your acting career, and even after Forrest Gump, still trying to find your place in that and also helping the military. But it seemed like a lot changed after 9/11, though, when that happened.
Yeah, in the book, there's a chapter called Turning Point, and that there it's for a reason. It's the September 11th chapter. Mm-hmm. And I think the work that I'd done with the veterans, the Vietnam veterans, locally in Chicago in the 80s and getting involved with our wounded in the 90s after I played Forrest Gump, I was introduced to the organization called Disabled American Veterans. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got like 2 million wounded veterans that are part of this organization.
Yeah.
And at that time, they were, you know, this is the 90s, so they went back to World War II. And getting involved with them kind of set the stage for what I would do after September 11th and the attacks on our country and the deployments to Afghanistan, the deployments to Iraq, the fact that we were losing people in combat, they were getting killed, they were getting hurt, we had more and more wounded coming into the hospitals. I just felt like there was a role for me to play in not just on the movie screen or the television screen, but in life to try to bring some joy and lift some spirits. And I really felt in some ways just called to service at that. I remember I tell a story in the book about going to our little Catholic church in Malibu. We lived in Malibu, and there's a small Catholic church where our kids were going to school. And September 11th happened on a Tuesday, and George Bush wanted to make the following Friday a national day of prayer for the nation.
Right.
And so the houses of worship were packed all across the country. The churches were just packed during this day. And we went to our little local Catholic church, and there was no place to sit. It was so crowded. And so me and my family, and my kids were little, all of us stood on the side of just on the wall.
Yeah.
And we listened to, there was the mass, the homily, all this. I remember the priest saying the first words out of his mouth to everybody when he started his homily was, "This has been a tough week." Yeah. And I'll never forget that because it was a horrible week.
Yeah.
But something may have happened at that point, because in the homily, while I can't remember every word or every detail.
Right.
There was something I took from it, because everybody in there was trying to find some way to help their own grief about what had happened to our country and the images that everybody had from that terrible day and everything. And I had my heart was broken. And I heard something that day about service being a great healer. And whether he said those words or not, I heard those words somehow. And I ramped up everything at that point. So I consider September 11th to be a point where I stopped focusing solely on myself and my career and my acting to this broader service life of trying to help people. And I, having been involved with veterans back in the 80s and 90s, I knew exactly where I was going to employ my efforts, and that was going to be to help the men and women who were responding to those attacks.
How do you think that our listeners, anyone listening to this podcast, can better serve the members of our armed forces, especially those who are wounded, veterans who are trying to cope, just the regular person listening? What are some ways that they can help to serve?
You know, there's certainly a lot of national organizations. I have one, the Gary Sinise Foundation, and we have thousands of donors and thousands of people that support us and contribute to us so that we can facilitate all the programs that are part of the foundation and everything. And there's a lot of good nonprofits out there that you can support. But the first thing I always say is that, you know, if everyone would take up the charge to, in their own neighborhoods, in their communities, in their towns, in their cities, in their states, to seek out the men and women who have served our country, the families who have endured long deployments, who may be struggling, if everyone, every community in every in this country kind of made it a mission to make sure that we take care of the people that defend us in whatever ways they need, then the problems that we hear about veterans not getting services or veterans not getting support or having to stand in line too long or, you know, they can't get an appointment or whatever. If we just took some responsibility ourselves for patting them on the back and asking them what they need in our down, the neighbor down the street might be a wounded veteran or something like that, I think we'd reduce that problem. Because, and that's what I'm trying to do, is just reach out and touch them personally and try to inspire others to action to do the same thing.
Well, God bless you in that work, Gary. I'm going to be making a donation to the Gary Sinise Foundation, and I'm going to encourage our listeners to do the same, because you're doing a lot of good work to help those in the armed forces, those who are veterans. And there's no excuse for us to turn a blind eye. So I'm very grateful. I am a grateful American for your work and for many others. And I think also when we reflect on this and what you're talking about and then that homily you heard, that also reminds me of a quote from C.S. Lewis. He once said that God whispers to us in our pleasures, he speaks to us in our conscience, and he shouts to us in our pain. It's his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. Now, sometimes we hear God most clearly and loudly in pain, either the pain of a nation that's been attacked or the pain of suffering in a crisis in one's own life, which is a good segue into the new film that you're starring in this week called I Still Believe, based on the life of Christian singer Jeremy Camp. So while we still have some time with you, let's talk a little bit about that and this movie that's coming out now this week I recommend people to see.
That's a beautiful quote, and my son is a big C.S. Lewis fan, and I'm sure he knows that quote, and he'll be happy to hear that one.
Well, I've had the pleasure to meet your son, Mac. He's a very solid young man. I really enjoyed my time that I got to spend with him. So we'll talk about, so the film is I Still Believe, and this is actually the first faith-based film that I just found this out yesterday that's going to be shown in IMAX. So it's the first faith-based film.
You just told me that.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah, it's the first one that's going to have an IMAX premiere. And it's the story of award-winning Christian singer Jeremy Camp and his first marriage to Melissa Hinn Henningkamp and their struggle with her cancer diagnosis. Country singer Shania Twain plays Jeremy Camp's mother, opposite actor Gary Sinise, who plays Jeremy Camp's father. Britt Robertson plays Camp's late wife, and New Zealand actor KJ Apa is playing the role of Camp. He's an actor in the film and the TV series Riverdale. So the story of Jeremy Camp, a lot of our listeners probably know his music. He's an award-winning Christian musician.
Huge following.
And I watched the trailer for I Still Believe, and I'm telling you, it gave me goosebumps when I watched that trailer. It's just such a powerful story about someone wrestling with their faith and illness and personal tragedy, but always turning to God in the midst of it. What attracted you to the role of Jeremy's father in this film?
I loved the father-son relationship. The father's very he's torn because Jeremy makes some decisions that he doesn't necessarily agree with or understand at the time that Jeremy makes them. But he comes to have great admiration and respect for the decision that his son makes. And it's a beautiful, loving father-son relationship in that way. So, you know, I thought in the simple way that that particular story in the movie is told between the father and son, and it's, you know, the primary story is the love story between Melissa and Jeremy.
Right.
In the small and simple way that that father-son story is told, I thought it was very, very effective. Economically, because, you know, it's not about the father.
Right.
It's not about my character. It really is the two young folks. But the story was a good one. And I know the filmmakers. I knew the two guys that made it. They made a movie last year called I Can Only Imagine.
Right.
And it was a big, big hit in that market. Dennis Quaid was terrific in it. They did a terrific job with it, and they asked me to come on board, and I was happy they did.
And you could probably relate to some of it. I know sometimes actors, of course, borrow from their own personal lives, and now that your children were little when you're doing a lot of your more famous roles, both the roles like, you know, Apollo 13, Forrest Gump, and now you're transitioning to roles where you have adult children of your own. Some have gone off to be married, and you know that feeling of like, I mean, my kids are still little, of course, 2 and 4 years old. That's way down the line for me to imagine with them. But you're always still that secure foundation for them to turn to, even when things get rough, you know. And I think that's something maybe you brought into the character.
Yeah, I mean, I have, you know, we have two daughters and a son, and I have a very close relationship with all my kids. And I found some similarities in the Jeremy role with my own son, and you know, they go through some very tough things in the film, and our family's been through some hard things as well. So I kind of understood it. Their faith is tested, so that story is not an unusual story.
Yeah,
that story's been told before, but the way they do it in I Still Believe, I think is beautiful. It's heartbreaking, but it's heartwarming as well, because the love that these two have for each other and the way they express it and share it with each other, it's unlike, you know, today we have a lot of pop culture craziness with young folks and the way they're portrayed in the movies.
Right.
This is, there's something kind of very pure about how these two go about building their relationship. And it's based on a true story. So I thought, wow, you know, this is something that we just don't see very often. So I think people will be very touched by it, very moved by it. And the two young folks, Britt and KJ, are just so good together.
Well, I'm excited to be able to see the film. What is, especially people listening who they might, just to tie everything together we've been talking about, I know there are people listening who may be going through rough things. They might have a husband who's been deployed. They might have a family member who's been diagnosed with an illness like what Jeremy Camp deals with in the film. You know, they might, I think there's a theme in a lot of the work you have done and continue to do of how do I bear the weight sometimes that life places on my shoulders? And what have you found in your own faith life, your own personal journey? And that may not a comprehensive answer, but at least things to think about for how to bear that weight sometimes when life puts it on your shoulders and it can feel like too much sometimes.
The character I play in the movie says to his son at one point, "My life is not full." My life is not full in spite of the disappointments that I've had. It's full because of them. And I think the adversities that we face sometimes and the challenges that we face and the overcoming of some of those challenges just makes us stronger and life becomes a little bit clearer. We can, once we've been through enough of that, we know we can pretty much handle just about anything with our faith and keep our faith strong. And, you know, we've certainly been through a lot in our own family, and I write about some of those personal things in my book. We decided to share some very, challenging times that our family had gone through. But in a chapter, chapter 9 in the book is called Darkness and Light.
Right.
And the whole first part of the chapter is very dark. And, it was at times I didn't know how we were going to emerge into the light, but we did. And it was perseverance. It was love. It was faith. It was a lot of different things that helped us through. And I think... that's one of the reasons I like this particular story of I Still Believe. Through it all and through everything that happens through him, all the difficult things, in the end, he still believes and moves forward.
Well, amen to that. Philippians 4:13, I can do all things in Christ who strengthens me. And so... always to keep that at the forefront of our minds. A reminder to our listeners, definitely consider checking out Gary's book, Grateful American. Definitely, I highly recommend that. And also the new movie that he's starring in, I Still Believe. You can catch it in theaters. You can even catch it in IMAX to see a Christian film larger than life in IMAX. You can see I Still Believe. Definitely recommend that you check that out this weekend.
If you're interested in learning more about what we're doing at the Gary Sinise Foundation, please go to GarySiniseFoundation.org, look at the YouTube channel and the program pages to see all the wonderful things we're doing all across the country and in many different spaces. We're helping a lot of people, and we can use your support.
Definitely. I hope you will consider supporting the Gary Sinise Foundation. Go to GarySiniseFoundation.org. Watch some of those videos. Bring a box of tissues with you as you do. But they're wonderful to see. Then thank you, everyone, for tuning into this episode. If you want to help us continue to do more episodes like this, to be on YouTube, to invite great guests like Gary to come and stop by, consider supporting the work we do at TrenthornPodcast.com. As little as $5 a month, you get access to bonus content, and you help us be a light to people who may be in darkness and may be struggling right now. So, Gary, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Trent.
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.